Following is a live presentation of CITR News.
CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast.
And now here's your host, Carrie Baptist.
Good evening and thanks for joining us. Carrie's away today. I'm Richard Kemick, your anchor. In the news this week, the Cambie Street Bridge was partially closed this Saturday because of the Bridge to a Cool Planet demonstration, the demonstration that hoped to encourage Vancouverites to engage in climate change activism in preparation for the upcoming climate change summit in Copenhagen. We talked to the UBC reporters about the movement and what it was like to be on the bridge. We'll also check in with Groundwire as they discuss the 10-year legalization of midwifery in Quebec and the developments and challenges that have come along with it. We'll have all that plus sports and your weekly weather forecast coming up this half an hour right here on Campus Radio's News 101. First up, I am pleased to present this weekly series with the UBC, a look at campus news with Charlize Gordon, Samantha Jung, and Kathy Yan Lee, who are in the studio this afternoon, bringing us the headlines from this edition's front page.
Hi, I'm Samantha Jung for Kathy Yan Lee and Charlize Gordon, and this is this week's top stories. In the beginning of September, the BC government cut arts funding to the BC Arts Council, the BC Arts and Culture Endowment Fund, and the BC Gaming Commission. The cuts are cited to total an 81% decrease in funding this fiscal year and a 92% decrease in 2010-2011. The cuts to the Gaming Commission are destined to have a big impact, not only on arts, but also on sports and social groups who rely on the money to fund community projects, and local arts groups are feeling the impacts.
In the war between opposition and supporters of Vancouver 2010 Olympic Games, the AMS has maintained a neutral stance. Even though the AMS has repeatedly stated that they feel that the students have not been heard properly, they came under fire in the summertime for not sending a representative to the Overlay Committee, an organization responsible for coordinating transportation and security surrounding the games, even though they requested in the first place. Relationships between the AMS and UBC regarding the Olympics has now been reconciled.
UBC law professor Sharon Sutherland uses her love for drama, vampires, and combines it with her law work. Instead of regular cases, she uses scenes from popular TV shows such as Grey's Anatomy to demonstrate legal issues. Not only that, she is also a big player in the Buffy Conference, an academic gathering concerning the vampire-related show. In her research, Sutherland has found over 200 references to vampires in U.S. case law over the previous 50 years.
After only two recent meetings discussing their relationship with the organization, AMS Council voted in favor of their intent to leave the Canadian Alliance of Student Associations, or CASA, on April 1, 2010. The AMS will have to wait until April 2010 to withdraw from CASA due to the organization's regulations around associate member status. The vote was almost unanimous, with 25 councillors voting in favor of the motion and only two votes against. Despite the strong support for leaving the organization, many councillors have since criticized the AMS executive for their unprofessional conduct with the lobbying organization.
The Student Legal Fund Society, or SLFS, has put forward $18,500 to fund a program that will provide workshops, training, and aid for students in the lead-up to and during the 2010 Winter Olympics. The Society decided to give the program the go-ahead after receiving an application for funding and partnership from the BC Civil Liberties Association. However, concern was brought up that there was too much of a political tinge attached to the decision.
UBC has dropped 6 spots in the Times Higher Education World University rankings this year, falling from 34 to 40. UBC President Stephen Toop cautioned against taking the rankings too seriously, saying that the survey is based on self-reported data and not on objective measures. However, AMS VP academic Johannes Rabane agreed that while the survey might not present an accurate depiction of UBC, there are a number of prospective students who will look at the rankings as sole metric by which to choose the university. He also added that UBC has much more to offer than what is reflected in the survey alone.
In their season finale on Friday night, there is no cliffhanger ending for the Thunderbirds football team as they fell to the Manitoba Bisons 25-17 at a wind-shaken Thunderbird Stadium. UBC finished the season with 6 straight defeats, ending the season 2-6.
Today we have Spencer Rasmussen, Director of Common Energy UBC, to speak to us. Hi, Spencer.
Hi.
Tell us what Bridge to a Cool Planet is.
I'd be happy to. Bridge to a Cool Planet was part of 350.org's International Day of Action that saw citizens in 181 countries attending 5,200 events worldwide demand action on climate change. Here in Vancouver, we saw thousands. Latest numbers I'm hearing is 6,000 out on Cambie Street Bridge to demand action from Ottawa to cut emissions and to be a leader in Copenhagen.
What is Common Energy and what do you do?
Common Energy is a student organization dedicated to bring UBC beyond climate neutral. What that means, beyond just kind of sounding cool, is that we want the students, the staff, the faculty to be doing more to solve climate change than they do to cause it. So we want the university to both take ownership over its personal impacts and to be working to create solutions through research, through education, through teaching. So we're engaged in many, many things. But recently we've been working very hard to advance the sustainability academic strategy, which is a part of the campus plan. And other work around outreach to students, and work on waste and water issues at UBC.
What is the most important number in the world?
350. I'm glad you asked that question. As I said, the International Day of Action was organized by 350.org, and that number is chosen because there's a growing consensus among climate scientists that 350 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere is the maximum sustainable concentration of carbon that we can have. And we need an international agreement that is going to work toward that target.
Thanks, Spencer.
Thank you.
I'm Samantha Jung for Charlize Gordon and Kathy Ann Lee for UBC News.
Thank you to the UBC for that segment. Stay tuned. We're going to take a short break, but up next we'll be jumping across the country to examine the practice of midwifery in Quebec.
Do you feel like the issues you care about are trivialized in the mainstream press? Want a media that isn't afraid to step on the toes of corporate interests? Profit-driven media leaving you without the information you need to properly exercise your franchise? Then Media Democracy Day is for you. On Saturday, November 7th, come down to the Vancouver Public Library, located at 350 West Georgia Street, to celebrate Media Democracy Day. You'll have the opportunity to talk to Vancouver journalists who are producing alternative news and hear informative panel discussions about democratizing our media. This is your chance to learn more about how power and profits drive reporting. Protest the status quo and call for change. Okay. In part by CITR 101.9 FM.
Do you like having fun and winning cool prizes? Then you gotta check out the Sustainability Television 2009 Youth Media Contest.
Sustainability Television and the Sierra Club of BC want your creative, fun, and inspiring poems and essays with pictures or videos describing what you're doing to make your community more sustainable.
There are tons of totally rad prizes to be won. In addition to cash prizes, sponsor prizes include a $10,000 25-day river excursion, a recycled PC laptop, passes to Y Yoga and Sempre Viva Yoga, organic grocery delivery from Spud, as well as visits for you and a friend to Whistler's Zip Trek Eco Tours, and much, much more.
The contest runs until January 9th, 2010. But the sooner you enter, the more likely you are to win. Check out sustainabilitytelevision.com for full details. And tell us what you're doing.
CITR 101.9 and Glory Days present Halloween the Boner. Saturday, October 31st, 2009 at the Biltmore Cabaret and the Astoria. Party 1 at the Biltmore will have performances by Fan Death, special guests from Los Angeles, Jeremy J, and special guests from Germany, Circle Square, with DJs Maggie Husband, Sincerely Hana, and Jamie. Party 2 at the Astoria will feature No Gold and Bogus Togus Live, with Night Shift DJs Tyler Fedchuk and Justin G. Doors are at 9 p.m. and the parties go till late, with a $250 best costume prize at each party. Tickets for both shows available at Zulu, Scratch, and Red Cat Records. Brought to you by CITR, Color Magazine, Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Lindsay'sDiet.com, ChopTup.com, and Glory Days, happening every Saturday at the Biltmore from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m.
Thanks for staying with us. You're listening to News 101, broadcasting live from the Student Union Building at UBC this evening. I'm Richard Kemick. Now we go to Groundwire for providing us with a segment on midwifery in Quebec and about the 10-year anniversary of legalization of the practice.
Attended an event held in Montreal commemorating the 10-year anniversary of the legalization of midwifery in Quebec. They filed the following report for Groundwire.
My name is Noémie Desrochers. I'm happy to be here tonight because I was actually one of the first babies in Quebec to be given birth with the help of a midwife, Isabelle Brabant, who's one of the first midwives in Quebec. 30 years later, I was giving birth to my own daughter with the same midwife.
My name is Sinclair Harris, Pointe Claire Birthing Centre. I arrived in Canada in 1970, and to my knowledge, there was no midwifery in place then. And so I worked as a nurse in a high-risk hospital, doing supportive care for women who were having babies, but always with the philosophy of a midwife and trying to advocate for women as well as I could.
Now, the professionalization of midwifery in Quebec involves setting up some kind of program. It's a four-year degree?
Yes. Midwifery is a four-year degree. During the course of the pilot project, it started in 1994, and by 1998, they knew it would be legalized. So midwifery became legalized in 1999, but also in 1999, the baccalaureate program, Practic Sage-Femme, started at the University of Quebec at Trois-Rivières.
And what if of tonight we're celebrating 10 years of midwifery being legal as a profession in Quebec?
It is indeed a celebration because since we started, there were maybe 30 of us or 40 of us. We have seen new birthing centres open. We have seen 5 or 6 years of students graduated, even though it's a small number. We are now doing 2.7% of the births in Quebec. There is recognition of midwifery in remote areas like Nunavik, which is indeed a cause to celebrate because that's a very traditional practice. Their statistics are showing that it's very safe to give birth up there in outlying areas. And we have great hope for the future. We are expanding. We need more money. We need opening of more positions. We need expense of more birthing centers. But I feel very optimistic about the future.
I'm Dominique Forêt. I'm president of the Ordre des Sages-Femmes du Québec. But we want to celebrate to all the families that have given their dream of giving birth at home to make possible that the profession can be recognized.
My name is Isabelle Brabant. I'm a midwife, and this month I celebrate 30 years of midwifery.
And as I understand it, you're one of the first midwives in Quebec. Could you explain what that means to our listeners?
Well, when we started, because there was a little tiny bunch of us back then, the same need of women to live something different with their birth, we kind of responded to that call in different areas. Some women were in Quebec, some in Sherbrooke, some in Montreal. So we kind of started by helping women who were going to have their babies by themselves at home anyway. So we studied and we got together and we went to every workshop that we could think of, and we studied very rigorously actually. But very soon we knew that we wanted legal midwifery here in Quebec, and we wanted access for every woman. So we worked in that direction right from the start.
In the 30 years that you've been practicing midwifery, did you see the practice of midwifery and the legalization of it here in Quebec as part of a bigger movement for reproductive rights or healthcare reform in Canada?
Well, absolutely. It's part of that. It's part of the women's movement as well to regain power over your own life. And this is one more option and one more vision.
Is it part of a bigger movement in Canada, midwifery?
Absolutely. There are midwives now in more than half of the provinces and territories in Canada. The first one was Ontario. I think it was in the early 90s. And the last one was Nova Scotia this year. And midwifery will soon be a reality everywhere in Canada. And at a time where services, the first line services, are so much lacking in so many regions, even in big cities, but as well in remote areas. The fact that somebody who is totally dedicated to pregnancy, birth, to prenatal care, postnatal care for women, it's just, you know, a win-win offer that Canada can't refuse.
And what are you celebrating this evening during this 10th anniversary, this birthday celebration, as Naomi called it earlier?
I'm celebrating the power of people who want to change things, and that's a great thing to celebrate.
Enjoy your celebration. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You were just listening to Isabelle Brabant, one of the first midwives in Quebec, speaking with Gretchen King for Grand Wire on the 10-year anniversary of the legalization of midwifery in Quebec. Grand Wire.
Thank you to Grand Wire for providing us with that segment. We're going to take a short break, but stay tuned. Sports and weather are next. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Well-known pimp, narcotics king, big-time racketeer, back in full force.
This could be one of the big moments in your life. Don't make it your last.
Look, this thing might be bigger than even we think it is.
Do you need an upgrade to the soundtrack to your life? Maybe a song from a film or a tune from TV? Radio Free GAC brings you sounds of the cinema, along with the songs that will be defining your future and the forgotten classics that need a little rescue.
Yeah, come on, baby. Come on. I won't let you down. Follow me.
Radio Free GAC, Monday evening, 7:30 till 9 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
I believe I've survived for a reason to tell my story to touch lives.
Hip-hop artist Emmanuel Jal, once a child soldier in Sudan, has returned to his home country, and this time his weapon is a microphone. His unique story and effort to build peace, War Child, is just one of the 25 films featured this year at the Amnesty International Film Festival, November 12th to 15th at the Van City Theater, 1181 Seymour Street. Full program available at amnestyfilmfest.ca, brought to you in part by CITR Radio.
I got a reason for being on this earth, cause I know more than many what's up. Life is worth enough. Now that I get a chance to stand my ground, I'm gonna run over mountains, leaps and bounds.
Welcome back to News 101. Thanks for staying with us. Right now, it's 5:19 p.m. and time for Thunderbird Eye on Sports with Wilson Wong. Wilson?
Good Monday afternoon. I'm Wilson Wong with a look back at one of the busiest sports weekends of the year for UBC Athletics. The two-time defending national champion women's volleyball team picks up right where they left off. They sweep the Winnipeg Westmen in their season opening series. The pair of straight sets wins for UBC is highlighted by a strong performance by Shanice Marcel. She picks up a game-high 9 kills along with 10 digs on Saturday. Veteran Kyla Ritchie also has a strong weekend with 8 kills Saturday.
Well, Doug's always talking about not underestimating a team, no matter what they've done in previous years or what we know the girls are going to do, because every single game can go either way, and so we just really wanted to make sure it was on our side of the court, and I think we did that really well. We kept it up to our pace, and if it died down a little bit, we would just bring it back up with our game, and I think we did that really well today.
UBC's 2009 CIS championship banner was also raised to the War Memorial gym rafters Friday night. Meanwhile, the men's team split their first two games of the year after a straight sets loss on Friday. The Thunderbirds rally from a 2-1 deficit Saturday to force a fifth and final set. Robert Bennett's 17 kills leads the Birds to a 15-12 fifth set win. The men's soccer team is now on a 5-game winning streak. They beat Saskatchewan 2-0 on Friday and Alberta 1-0 on Saturday out at Thunderbird Park. UBC now has a record of 9 wins and 3 losses, tied for first place in the Canada West. The women's soccer team is unbeaten in 8 games after another sweep this past weekend. Like the men, they beat Saskatchewan 2-0 on Friday and Alberta 1-0 on Saturday. They are now in third place in the Canada West standings. The 2009 season is over for the UBC football team. The Thunderbirds came into Friday's game against Manitoba with a slim chance at the playoffs. They needed to win by at least 27 points and get help from several other teams. Instead, UBC loses 25-17 to the visiting Bisons. Down 9-3 in the third quarter, UBC quarterback Billy Green finds Spencer Betts with a 21-yard touchdown pass to give UBC the lead, but Manitoba responds with a field goal and touchdown to make it 19-10. Dave Boyd brings his Thunderbirds to within 2 with a 5-yard TD run after that, but the Bisons add 2 more field goals to seal the win. UBC running back Cheng Wei praises Boyd's performance.
Dave Boyd came in the second half and did a great job. I mean, you could tell he was determined to run for us, and I talked to him at half. I'm like, Dave, I think you're going to go in because I'm not doing as well as I should have. And he's like, yeah, buddy, I'll run for you. So I just, like I said, I love these guys. Like, Dave's the future, and I can't say any other than great things about these guys.
Wei is one of 4 players who have played their last game for UBC.
5 years goes by way too fast. I get here first year, and all the 5th year is like, yeah, drink it in, you know, take everything in stride. But 5 years later, here I am telling these young guys the same things, you know. It's a weird feeling to be done now.
The other graduating seniors are Mike Morris, Tyler Codron, and Braden Hobbs. Hobbs was injured and never got to play this season, while Codron was hurt in the first game of the year and didn't play again. UBC finishes 2009 with a record of 2 wins and 6 losses. On the ice, UBC's teams have another reason to dislike Lethbridge. Both the men and the women are swept by the Pronghorns. The 9th-ranked men lose 6-4 and 2-1 on the road, while the UBC women drop 2-1 and 3-2 games here on campus. The field hockey team is celebrating a whole bunch of honors this week. They sweep Victoria on the weekend, winning 4-2 and 1-0. The wins give UBC their 7th straight Canada West title, and 4 Thunderbirds receive individual honors. Abigail Ray is the Conference Rookie of the Year. She's also named to the Canada West All-Star Team, where she's joined by teammates Robin Pendleton, Kristen Harrington, and Elise Milosevic. Milosevic also finishes the year as the leading scorer in the conference. The women's rugby team beats Victoria 46-0 at the Canada West Championships to win bronze. Radha Jain scores 3 tries for UBC. The Thunderbirds will host the national championships in 2 weeks. And finally, UBC's basketball teams are now getting ready for their first regular season games this week. The men beat Waterloo in an exhibition game 67-61 on Saturday. The women beat Memorial 80-58 in their final preseason game. Good Monday afternoon. I'm Wilson Wong with sports for this past weekend. For more T-Birds coverage, tune in tomorrow at 4:30 for Wiener's Barbecue. I'm Wilson Wong. Have a great evening.
Thanks, Wilson, for that report. Now it's time for the week's weather report, and for that we are going to go to Alice Wong. Alice?
Thanks, Richard. Here's your forecast for October 26th to October 30th. It won't be a particularly exciting week ahead in the weather department. We'll get the usual cloudy with a chance of showers scenario that's typical of a West Coast autumn. But there's no major storms coming our way. It would be wise, however, to stay home this evening through the overnight. The passing cold front is bringing strong winds with gusts up to 40 to 60 kilometers per hour. A slight chance of showers is possible, and a nighttime low is plus 4 degrees. Tuesday, the low-pressure system will have moved off, and it will be a mostly sunny day, high of 11 degrees. Wednesday, the next low-pressure system will move in, and we'll see cloudy showers with a high of 10 degrees. Thursday will be cloudy with a 40% chance of showers and a high of 10 degrees. Friday will be cloudy showers as well with a high of 8. Currently, it's 11 degrees and partly cloudy at YVR.
Thanks, Alice, and happy Halloween to you as well.
You too.
And that's our program for October 26th, 2009. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments with us or give us a hot news tip or get involved in the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334. Or you can email news@citr.ca. Brad Pepping produced this radio program. For more news, join us next Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. I'm Richard Kemick. From the entire news team at CITR, thanks for listening. And stay tuned for Career Fast Track on 101.9 FM CITR.